Welcome to the Get Planty podcast. I'm your host, Dusty Heggie, owner of Revive Nursery, author of Becoming Planty, a little bit obsessed with my black coffee. It is my passion to revive your heart and home through the incredible gift of houseplants. I know that when we care for God's creation, He will reveal Himself, and my goal is to help you be able to actually enjoy that precious, often difficult growth process. To not worry the whole time about whether or not you're going to kill your plant, but instead to learn as you go, give yourself grace, and take care of not only your plant collection, but also yourself. Each week, I'll bring you actionable houseplant care tips, incredible guests to unpack what it means to grow well, and leave you feeling so encouraged and inspired as you curate your own dreamy houseplant collection. So grab a cup of coffee, snuggle up next to your plants, and join me in the process of growing well and getting planty. Welcome to episode 12 of the Get Planty podcast. I'm your host, Dusty Heggie, and today we have an incredible episode with Josh Rosen from Airplant Man talking all about, you guessed it, airplants. Airplants are super trendy and super adorable, and there's a lot of misconception on how to grow them well and how to keep them alive and beautiful. So today we are going to cover how to love on your airplants in the right way so that they can love you back. We talk about how airplants photosynthesize, what the heck an airplant even is, how to water them. Yes, they need water, and how much light that they're going to need to grow well. It truly is such a good episode. I feel like I didn't know a whole lot about airplants going into this conversation with Josh Rosen, but I left feeling like I know so much about airplants. So it really is a high value episode. I will warn you, the audio quality is pretty poor, and I apologize for that. But the value and the quality of this conversation far exceeds, in my opinion, the need to have really good audio. And so while audio is something that we're working on, sometimes it just doesn't go how you want. And I think that it's just more important that I get this episode out to you, that you can learn a whole bunch about airplants, can get in touch with Josh Rosen, add some airplants to your collection. It's going to be a good thing. I'm confident good things are going to come from this episode. Before we dive into this incredible, incredible content, I want to read to you an iTunes review. It says, I love following and listening to Dusty. Such a light in the world. She's easy to listen to. And she is sure touching my green thumb, Jesus-loving heart. Guys, that review makes me so happy. And if you want to make me happy too, head to iTunes and pretty please take a minute and leave me a review. It would mean just the whole wide world to me. Readings and reviews are what gets this podcast out into other people's earbuds. And guys, that's all I want to do right now. So this year, I'm really trying to focus on bringing you some really high value content to the Get Planty podcast, improving things like audio quality. And I'm really putting a lot of effort and time into this podcast to bring you so much planty knowledge for free, yo. So if you could do me a favor and please head to iTunes, leave me a rating and review. Know that it means so much to me. And while you're at it, if you could screenshot this episode and share it on Facebook, on Instagram, on wherever, and tag me at Revive Nursery so I can see. I would be even more happy, you guys. The more people we can invite and the more people we can talk about this episode, the more can listen and grow their own beautiful houseplant collection. And I really need your help to do that. All right. One last thing before we dive into this episode. I have a really fun houseplant quiz for you guys, and it's at revivenursery.com/quiz. And in this quiz, it's going to help you find your dream houseplant to add to your collection. And it's just a lot of fun. It looks at stuff based on your personal preferences, based on your conditions in your home and your knowledge and confidence in your ability to care for plants. And it's going to help you find a plant that it's going to be most suitable for you to bring in. So you can head to revivenursery.com/quiz and I think you're going to love it. It's a lot of fun. The part that makes me the most happy is people give me a lot of really good feedback on the quiz, but I get even more good feedback on the emails that follow. After you take the quiz, you're going to get an email right to your inbox that tells you what your results are. You'll also see it on the website, but you'll get another email that unpacks how to keep that beautiful plant alive. And if you don't super love your quiz results, you're going to get another email with a few more options that I think you're going to like based on your quiz results. And following that, every once in a while, you're going to get another email about once a week, but probably more like once every other week, if I'm really honest. Get more content just to sort of help equip you to grow well, because that's what I'm here for. I really want you to be able to have just so much value, to really enjoy this process. And I want to come alongside you. And my email community is probably my favorite community to pour into. I spend so much time and so much effort making these emails feel really personal, feel really exciting, to be really honest and real. And I don't have like the time to waste your time. I am a busy lady. So just know that every hour I spend into pouring these emails really is an intentional hour, because I want to give you high value and I want to give you my best foot forward. So head to revivenursery.com/quiz to take that quiz. Head to iTunes, leave me a review. And now it's time to dive into our episode and our conversation with Josh Rosen from Airplant Man, unpacking the ever wonderful air plants. Well, do you want to just start by telling everybody who you are and what you do?
Sure. I'm Josh Rosen. I'm the founder of Airplant Man, and I'm a landscape architect and also a real plant enthusiast. Became obsessed with air plants many, many years ago when I first saw them and was so intrigued by how unique they were. And that sort of passion grew to an out-of-control collection, which grew into a product line and a business. So it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, that is awesome. It's cool how the things we love like that tend to take over.
Yeah, I warn people once they start collecting one or two that things can quickly get out of control, and you can be surrounded by thousands of them, and it's easy to get sucked in, but it's a nice thing to be involved in. It really connects you with nature and gives you something to care for and sort of pay attention to. And one of my favorite things is talking to customers years later and seeing how they've kept their plants happy and look at them every day and really enjoy them. So that's the real rewarding part of what we do.
Yeah, for sure. I completely agree with that. There's a lot of good lessons and a lot of joy to be had through houseplant care. So especially through air plants, I think it's cool.
Definitely. As you mentioned, there's a lot of interest, but also confusion and misinformation out there about this genus of plants. And so I'm always excited to sort of share a little bit more factual background and tips that'll help you keep them alive and happy.
Yes, please. Can you maybe start by just sort of defining for us what an air plant is?
Absolutely. So air plants is a common name. And so, there are common and Latin names given to all plants. The common name is sort of whatever people call it. And those are in English and easy to say, but much less accurate. And so the same common name could apply to a wide range of different types mm-hmm. of specific plants. And so we try to use the scientific names to be a little more precise, and even though those are getting reclassified all the time. So air plants in general can refer to any sort of epiphyte. And an epiphyte is a plant that lives upon another plant. So there's many different varieties of plants that have kind of created this adaptation. There's the succulents and cacti and orchids and tillandsia, which we're going to talk more about, and they can all grow epiphytically up in a tree, on a bare rock face, in all sorts of unique habitats. And they've evolved that way to take advantage of this niche where there's less competition. And it's a really, really neat phenomenon. But if we're going to be more precise, what I'm talking about when I say air plant are tillandsia. And that's T-I-L-L-A-N-D-S-I-A. And the Tillandsia genus has 600 different species within it. And so there are Tillandsia stricta, Tillandsia tectorum, and on and on. And all these different species have this amazing variety of shapes and colors and sizes. And there's something really unique and interesting about all of them. And then just to make it even more complicated, they all hybridize. Not all of them, but many of them easily will crossbreed, and then you'll see interesting combinations of the two parent plants sort of playing out in the hybrid. So that's what I'm talking about specifically when I say air plant, but you could, my plant geek friends point out that I should have been Tillandsia man, but I point out that they probably didn't get a marketing degree because that doesn't roll off the tongue
right,
quite as well.
A little bit
more about Tillandsia. They're in the Bromeliadaceae family, that's an easy one to say. And that's a larger group that includes all different types of bromeliads, which are probably a little more familiar, and that includes pineapples and other plants as well. So this is one little branch that formed actually quite recently, and they all have this unique ability to absorb water and nutrients directly through their leaves. And that's really their special adaptation, and it allows them to grow grow pretty much anywhere suspended in air. In nature, you'll see them in trees or on a rock, or you'll see them even colonizing telephone wires. Many of them have, I'm jumping ahead to reproduction, maybe we'll come back to that, but they created this amazing ability to sort of survive without soil, and that's what I loved about them. You think of plants and the one main characteristic you think of them all sharing is a connection with soil and the earth. And this is a genus of plants that basically figured out how to break the main rule we think of when we think of plants, which is they can basically live suspended in air. And I thought there was something really intriguing about that, both from a caring for them perspective and all the opportunities that opens up, and just sort of as a something metaphorically interesting about it that really intrigued me. And so that was really neat. So other things about Tillandsia, they do have roots, and that's one thing that people can get a little confused by. Even though their leaves kind of act as a traditional root by absorbing water and nutrients, they do grow little roots out of the bottom, but they're purely for gripping onto whatever they're holding onto to support themselves. So they don't actually absorb nutrients through them. And so because they're not maybe the most slightly attractive part of the plant, we'll often trim them off. And that doesn't hurt the plant as long as you stay below the sort of growing base of the plant. You can sort of trim these kind of brown roots that come out. And those are just for gripping.
Gotcha. For trimming them, is it, you said there's like a spot for which you shouldn't trim back too far? How do you know?
Yes. I would say don't go any further than the brown root part. If you're getting into the green, you should stop. Yeah.
Gotcha.
So that's a good rule of thumb. And, you know, how those leaves actually absorb the water and nutrients is a really amazing process. And we won't get too scientific or technical here. But, you know, to the naked eye, you will notice many of the, almost all of the plants, they have a somewhat fuzzy appearance. And that does not mean that they're dead. It means that you're seeing the trichomes. And that's sort of the unique adaptation of the leaf, whereby it's... in a nutshell, the ability of the leaf to sort of have pores that open and close. And so when it's raining out, the pores open and the water can sort of enter the leaf and the plant. And then once it dries out, those portals will close again and get this fuzzy appearance, which is actually sort of a dead leaf cell that hovers above this opening. And that sort of seals it off and allows it to not become desiccated and dried out once the sun emerges. And so it's a really, really amazing adaptation. And then if you look at kind of close photographs of these trichomes, they're just the most interesting thing. Just a really, really, it looks like something from outer space. And each plant looks a little bit different, but it's a similar strategy. And a little bit more technical stuff, they do photosynthesize like all plants, and they, take in oxygen, or they take in CO2 and release oxygen. But they do it in a reverse way that typical plants do, and that's called CAM, C-A-M, photosynthesis. And what that means is they kind of reverse the typical pattern. And the reason they do that is to save water. So if you're photosynthesizing during the day, your leaf is sort of transpiring and interacting with the air, and that can... lead to loss of water. It is a more efficient way to do it, but it's more risky if you don't have a good water source. And so Tillandsia, like some other plants, have figured out that if you reverse that cycle and you're opening your leaf surface at night, while it's a little bit less efficient, it reduces water loss a lot. So that is one of the strategies that you use to sort of figure out how you can live without, you know, deep roots pulling up moisture from the soil. But it does mean they grow slower and they don't get quite as big. And so the largest plants that you'll see are maybe the size of a basketball. They can form large clumps of many hundreds or even thousands of plants that can get bigger than that. But as a single plant, they won't get too much bigger than that, that basketball size. That would be a pretty, pretty amazing specimen.
Yeah.
And that's because of some of the limitations of how they grow.
That's cool. I had no idea that they did that. That's awesome. How is there even enough light at nighttime to like photosynthesize like that?
Well, that's what they're storing the sunlight during the day and then holding on to it and then using it at night.
Oh, gotcha.
And so that's a really broad picture. There's obviously a lot more technical.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But that's in broad strokes, that's what they're doing. And so it's less efficient, but less water loss is sort of the main thing. And I'm just always blown away. How did nature figure this out? A lot of trial and error. And
for real.
So ingenious and so incredible. And I don't know how they figured it out, but they did.
That's crazy. That's insane. I didn't know that. I'm learning so much.
Yeah, that's a fun little bit of detail. And again, I am not a trained botanist, so that was broad strokes. I may have gotten some details a little off, but that's a big picture of how they do it. Yeah, and so the point being is these are some amazing plants that occur naturally. I get this question a lot: is this real? Is it alive? Yes and yes are the answers. And just because I had sort of my whole life been exposed to them only kind of coming out of a box or in a nursery, I was really interested in seeing them more in habitat and kind of appreciating where they grow naturally. I took a trip down to Oaxaca in Mexico a little while ago with a group of Tillandsia experts, and we saw hundreds of different species growing in habitat. And for someone like me, it was pretty emotional. It was like going to see your holy grail of sort of plant stuff. And it was just fascinating to see how they just populate all these really incredible, unique niches. And then there's so many different species growing alongside each other. And it was just really inspiring. You just see quite a few kind of drop to fall to the ground just naturally. And you want to go around and collect them and put them all back.
Right. Yeah.
There's not usually someone doing that, so you should just let things take their course. And part of the trip, one of the interesting realizations I had was how many other epiphytes, as we were talking about before, do grow in trees alongside these Tillandsia. So you won't only have the Tillandsia; you'll have amazing cacti and orchids and mosses all populating kind of one big tree branch in a specific location. And so these little microclimates or little landscapes that are created were just breathtaking. So certainly encourage any of your listeners, if they get the opportunity to see these plants in habitat, whether it's Tillandsia or any plant, when you see where it comes from, you sort of really get a deeper appreciation and understanding for this plant that you usually see in a pot in the store.
For sure. Yeah, that's one of the ways I always suggest, like, no matter what plant you're bringing into your home, the very best thing you can do is learn where it's from. Like, what does it naturally get? Because that's the way, like, as houseplant collectors, no matter the plant, our goal is to do our best to, like, replicate its natural environment. So how incredible that you got to actually go to their natural environment and experience
that. Oh, my God.
You're headed to Japan, too, right?
Yes, I'm going to Japan, which has no natural air plants growing, I should point out, but clearly has a Tillandsia craze going on. And so that trip's coming up in a couple of weeks, and I'm very excited. It's in terms of where they do grow naturally, it's the southern U.S. down through South America. So it's really in the New World only. In Florida and Texas and a few other states in the south have native Tillandsia, but only a few species. And as you go through Mexico and Central America and South America, where there's just all different habitats where they inhabit. And so that's another question I get a lot: where do these grow naturally? And the truth is, I saw them growing in the spines of cactus in a desert, and I saw them in deep shade in a jungle. Obviously, these were different species. And
right.
So they've adapted over time to be able to get different species to inhabit extremely high light, low light, lots of water, not much water. And in general, the grayer and fuzzier the leaves are, the more they're desert adapted and the more high light, low water they'll want. And if you've got big, fat, wide green leaves, that's going to be more of a jungly one. That's just in general. There are some general tips that kind of work for all of them that we can get into in a bit, but that's one quick way to sort of see what it's going to be a little more tolerant of. Will it handle a bit more shade or a bit more sun? In Japan, they are absolutely obsessed with Tillandsia, like around the world. And one of the fun things about starting your plant management and connecting us with fans of these plants in every corner of the world, from Sweden to Singapore to everywhere, people are nuts about Tillandsia, and it's really fun to share that passion.
Yeah, for real. Are you going down for like a conference or something?
I am just traveling around, and so
that's awesome.
Been sort of reaching out to people online, and certainly would encourage any of your listeners that are over there to let us know. I'll be out there for a while and just kind of exploring, so it's going to be great.
That's awesome. That's so cool. I have a question. So for the roots on air plants, do they act like similarly to like an aerial root on, say, like a monstera or something, where if it does have those roots attached to something, it will grow bigger and stronger?
Yeah. So with the roots, they don't absorb nutrients. So
okay.
There is no like the aerial roots of other plants, when they hit kind of source of nutrition, they'll sort of suck it up and the plant will get bigger.
Right.
With Tillandsia, it's just to support it.
And, gotcha.
It is a sign that your plant is happy. If it's shooting out a lot of those aerial roots, it means that it's sort of found a spot that it wants to stay. So if you're seeing those roots growing, that's a sign you're caring for it well. But if you don't like the look of them, you can step them and it won't hurt the
gotcha.
Plant.
Cool. That's cool. Well, do you want to maybe unpack a little bit of some best air plant or Tillandsia practices?
Yes. Let's dive into what everyone wants to know. Where do these plants want to live?
Right.
And
yeah.
The first thing, and I was once doing, I'll start with just a quick story. I was once doing an event where there was sort of a film crew going around to different people and looking at their stuff. And we were told specifically not to talk, that they were just going to look at our stuff, talk, and move on. And it was live television. And I got to my table and they go, oh, these are air plants. We love these. These are the plants that need no water. And they absolutely do need water. And I was horrified and I didn't know what to do. And I couldn't help it. I broke the rule and I said, these plants need water. They're very easy to care for, but please don't tell all your viewers they don't need water. And that is the most common misconception I hear, is that they just get everything from the air. And yes, if you have them outside and you live in a place where there's some moisture in the air, then you might not need to water them that often or at all if your climate is perfectly suited to them. But certainly, if you're keeping them indoors at all, or if you live in a dry climate where they're not native, you will be needing to water them. And so in general, and these are general tips that, if you're in a drier, hotter place, you would do it more often. And if you're in a cooler place, wet place, a little less often. But they like regular wetting and then drying. And so in an indoor environment, I recommend soaking for several hours. And that means submerging the entire plant in water for several hours. And then you would remove it, turn it upside down, kind of shake out any loose water, and place it somewhere with air circulation or sunlight that it'll be completely dry within 4 hours. And that's to prevent rot. And so that's kind of the most important basic thing. Do not think that a little spritz from your spray can once every month is going to do anything except let your plant die quickly.
Yeah.
They really, and it's specifically indoors where it's a pretty difficult environment for plants, and it can be very dry between the heating and the air conditioning. It's a really challenging environment. They can survive there, but they need that deep soak to really have enough moisture to survive. I recommend that once a week as sort of a total average. Can be a little bit less or a little bit more depending on where you are. Mm-hmm. I do mine overnight, but at least if you do an hour or two, that would be enough. So that's the other thing. It's not like a 10-minute soak. You should really give it some time. Much more than 24 hours and they start to suffocate. But they can certainly do overnight. I've found them to do overnight with no problem. Now, a couple of things about the water you should use. Never use distilled water. That will actually kill them.
Oh, crazy.
Because distilled water has no nutrients in it. Through sort of osmosis or whatever, the balance of salts and nutrients, it will actually suck all the nutrients out of the plant because that distilled water has none in it. And so that's not something you should use.
Right, yeah, it makes sense because you're not in soil or in anything else that's going to give those nutrients to the plant.
Exactly.
I never thought of that.
Yes, so never use distilled water. On the other hand, they would like water that isn't super heavy in salts or other minerals. Filtered water like humans drink would be great. I used to get all sorts of big bottles of filtered water for the plants. They would drink better water than I would, and I did that for many years, and then I finally said, these plants have got to either toughen up or And so depending on the quality of your local water, sometimes potable water can be just fine. in nurseries and greenhouses, they'll often use reverse osmosis water instead of really clean water. You know, their perfect water is rainwater, nicely pH balanced and you know, from the sky and all the rest of it, and with some minerals in it, but not too much. But they can be somewhat tolerant of a range. I will throw in a little disclaimer. There are just a couple species like Tectorum and a few really drought tolerant ones, Eurographica, that are like deep desert ones that wouldn't love as much a deep soak. Mm-hmm. But they're in the vast minority. Almost all of them will really, really thrive if you give them that deep soak. Now, I live on the west side of Los Angeles, not too far from the ocean, with a little bit more mild climate. And there they are super happy just outside. And you spray them with the hose every couple weeks. And that's more than enough water for them to be happy. You know, in nature, they'll often be kind of just under a tree canopy or in a tree. And so that filtered bright light is sort of, again, the general rule of thumb. They like some sunlight, but not blasting sunlight, particularly like late afternoon if it's harsh.
Yeah.
So that's the next part of it. Regular water, very important. And the next thing is sunlight. So people often say, oh, I have a bathroom with no windows, but it'll get some steam from the shower. Is that a good place for them? And again, for a little while, maybe. And one of the nice things about plants is they're easy to rotate in different locations. They can certainly handle low light for a little while, a couple weeks maybe, but eventually they're going to need a higher light situation to start photosynthesizing again and make food to survive. And so a bathroom is a great place for tilanthia, only if you have a window or grow light. They do not need any special grow light, any sort of plant grow light that will that has the requisite spectrum. Will also work for tilanthia and sort of help them grow indoors. But bright filtered light, regular water, and then followed by quickly drying out to prevent rot are the kind of real big ones. And mm-hmm. then the final thing is air circulation. They absorb stuff and their leaves are happiest when they've got air flowing over them. Again, we've had them live for years indoors. We had someone keep one alive or keep a whole system alive for many years in the winters in Sweden. They sent those photos with just where there was zero sunlight and it was sub-zero temperatures for months on end, but they created an indoor environment that they thrived in. So they can be really hardy, but they would be happiest if there was a window cracked or a little bit of fresh air that they could get now and then would be ideal. But they can handle it without it if you don't have it. But if you can open the window, they'll be even happier.
Right, yeah. Yeah, that's really helpful.
Those are just the real basic rules of thumb. We have kind of a little bit more detail on my website. You can dive in, and we're always happy to send us your struggling tilanthia photo and describe what's going on, and we can do our best to diagnose. They're relatively pest-free. They can get some pests. Mealy bugs and stuff can attack them if you've put them sort of right next to an infected plant. But in general, a really nice thing, the lack of soil makes them very clean and really reduces a lot of the soil-borne pests that can be problematic. And so I don't think they're officially hypoallergenic, but they must be pretty close. Because they, you just have this clean plant and that's it. There's not really a substrate for pests to sort of grow in.
Yeah, yeah. I've gotten a lot of people ask me if they are toxic to like children or pets.
Good question. I more often get, are they edible? But I would say...
don't eat your houseplants, guys, under any circumstances.
Right. Well, after my cats and dogs have eaten all my indoor ones, I can no longer have them inside, but I'm happy to say all the animals are still healthy. To my knowledge, and again, I certainly wouldn't want to be the final say, do more research, but in my experience, they are not particularly tasty, but they are not toxic.
Cool.
I have not heard of any of them that cause some poisoning. But again, I would say check further sources, but in my experience, they're not toxic or delicious.
Or, not very delicious.
Well, although you would have to, my cats might disagree because there would be quite a few.
That's hilarious. Well, that's a good sign that they're not that toxic or at all.
Yes. I don't believe they're toxic at all. You know, you just always want to put in a disclaimer when you read
them. Right, for sure.
Like, but in my experience, they have not been.
That's cool.
And so... yeah, that's an important thing. Any other things you think you or your viewer or your listeners might be interested in learning more about?
I don't know. You covered so much stuff. And if they want to learn more, your website is airplantman.com, right?
Correct. Yeah. Airplantman, just like it sounds.com. And yeah, this kind of obsession and love of these plants, I soon had so many that I realized I needed a business so I could send some back out in the world. And
for sure.
Fortunately, I have helpers that send the beautiful ones out because I want to hoard them all to myself. So I had to separate myself a little bit.
Yeah.
But, it's a really fun plant to collect. There's something sculptural about them. And all of our designs, we seek to sort of highlight what's unique about them, which is that they hover in air. And so we have a tabletop vessel that suspends a single plant above different bases of materials that we make. And sort of it's kind of the same concept of a sculpture and a sculpture base, really highlighting that floating quality. And then the other thing we really emphasize is ease of care, because we know that that's ultimately going to make or break. Is this a long-term successful installation? Yeah. And so the vessels, you can slide the hand-wired plant out of the vessel, submerge it for its soaking, and then slide it back in. So it's getting great air circulation. It's easy to remove. And actually, another little detail I forgot to mention is a little bit of handling them is okay, but there are oils in our fingers that aren't particularly great for the weeds. Because of those kind of delicate trichome arrangement, our oily fingers can sort of clog up their pores, if you will, in a general way. So we've designed our products so that you can actually water the plants without touching them. It's fine to touch them when you're first installing them, but a lot of handling them long-term won't be great for their leaves. And so that's the vessel. And then we also have a vertical garden air plant frame. And our key design move there was to make the frame waterproof, because if these plants are going to be happy and get regular watering, you certainly don't want to be taking it apart every time it's time to water. So you can actually spray or soak the plants in the frame.
And that's awesome.
Makes it really fun and easy. And those are powder coated aluminum, so they're really lightweight. For our larger installations, we've done some giant ones. It's best to have some sort of built-in irrigation or the ability to hose it off. But our single frames is just hung on the wall like a picture frame, and it's very light to take off. And so once every week or two, when it's time for watering, you just pop it off the wall, pop it in your little soaking bin. And we're working on the custom air plant man soaking bin, but it hasn't debuted yet. Yeah. In the meantime, any sort of plastic container will work. And make sure your soaking container is clean. So don't use the same thing you used to mop the floors with, because that will kill them, the residue.
Right, yes.
And
yeah,
and so just make sure that it's a clean container. And I guess one other thing I'll just clarify with the watering. While the soaking is best, you could give it a drenching spray, under the sink or, with a really strong spray bottle. Mm-hmm. So it's the whole plant is dripping wet. You would just need to do that more often, maybe a few times a week.
Does the temperature of the water matter at all?
Room temperature is good. And yeah, that's another good point. In terms of temperature, if a human's comfortable, a Tillandsia will tend to be comfortable. I'd say 50 to 80 or so is sort of their ideal range. I think around 72 would be happiest, but they can tolerate a little higher. I get nervous outside when it gets down into kind of the mid-40s is the scary zone, and much lower than that, and you can actually have frostbite or areas of burnt leaves, and much hotter than 85 or so in direct sun can burn them as well. So that's a good general temperature guideline. And yeah, the water shouldn't be freezing cold or boiling hot. It's sort of comfortable to the touch.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that's really helpful.
Yeah. And they're really fun to design with. I think all the different textures and colors of the leaves provide an amazing kind of canvas to play with. And so when we kind of plant our larger installations, we'll just get trays and trays of all these different varieties, and that's sort of the paint. And then you can easily slide them in to create your living artwork. And it's really nice, because doing a vertical garden with plants that are naturally adapted to live in that environment, you're not putting soil or other substrates up on your wall. You've got this really clean, minimal, kind of transparent canvas, so that the plants can sort of either be really dense and solid, or you can leave more open areas and see right through it. And so it makes it a really light, clean way to do the sort of vertical gardens that are very popular. But yeah. I'm glad we covered all the care because they're not maintenance free. Right. I always say to people, they have different opportunities and abilities that other plants don't have, but then they have, you know, requirements that they have some requirements you have to respect as well. So they're not maintenance free or carefree, but they are, if you've got your system down and you do your regular watering, and if you do the soaking, you can keep reusing water for a fair amount of time. So that's a way that you can sort of be more efficient with it. And some of our irrigation systems will actually recycle the water. There are fertilizers available, and they are special Tillandsia fertilizers. They're, I believe, lower in phosphorus and maybe higher in some other nutrients. But if you did want to fertilize, make sure it's a Tillandsia specific fertilizer, and you can find those online. I actually don't fertilize. I've found that you're almost as likely to use a little too much and burn the plant as see dramatic growth from it, because you really need to do a very diluted amount, because they're quite sensitive to nutrients, and they're not used to getting that many nutrients, so you don't want to overwhelm it. But some people have had really good luck with the fertilizer kind of increasing growth and blooming. I can talk about our plants all day.
I love it. Go on. Talk to us about blooming. I know that blooming,
yeah,
I'm indoors.
And blooming. Yeah, so they all have amazing flowers. And if, you know, you've only seen Tillandsia sort of half dead in a basket on the way out of Home Depot, you've not really seen what's out there.
Right, really for sure. They can be gorgeous.
They can be really gorgeous. And yeah, you can see a lot of great photos on our website. I like to say they're good models. They sit still and they're looking on camera.
Yeah.
And they are, so they all bloom, and they have such a wide range of flowers, from purples and even some reds and yellows and greens and whites. And the flowers take a few different forms. And all the plants will send up a bloom spike or inflorescence. And then one by one, individual flowers will emerge over the course of several weeks. And so the whole process of sending up that spike, each individual flower coming out, can take even up to months in time. A very small number of them are fragrant. And if you get a chance to smell one of those, it is just breathtaking. Each one has a slightly different fragrance, but they're unique and just breathtaking. There's so few of them that I think it would not be practical to make a perfume, although I've had requests.
Yeah, that's
but,
so cool.
There are some really neat, Straminea and Cromata are two of my favorite fragrant ones. Doradia is also amazing. But they're all beautiful. And so after your plant kind of sends up this bloom spike and the individual flowers have all come down, you can actually snip that inflorescence off right at the base where it meets the plant, kind of just above where it's emerging from the plant itself, because eventually that will turn brown and die. Mm-hmm. If you want to wait, though, seed pods will form eventually, and many of them have a seed that's almost like a dandelion, where it's kind of this tufted thing, a tiny little seed, and that floats in the wind in nature, and wherever it lands, that's where a little plant grows. And so they kind of hope for the best, and that's how they'll often disperse their seed kind of over a wide distance. The other way they reproduce is after blooming, some will form pups or little offshoots right at the base. And so you'll have a whole nother plant or a couple more plants grow right out of the bottom of your existing mother plant. And you can either leave those to form a clump, or you could break them off and have kind of a bunch of smaller individual plants. The mother plant, and some will die, and some will continue growing.
Gotcha.
And then a very small group within this, within Tillandsia, the inflorescence shoots out. You've got this flower spike, if you can picture it. It'll bloom and then have the seed disperse. But then another plant will actually grow from the end of the inflorescence. And so you actually can get this almost chain of plants. You picture a new plant growing out of the flower spike, and then a new plant growing out of that one's flower spike. And that can be a really, really neat effect. Intermedia is one of the species that does that, and it's really quite striking.
Yeah, that sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Are there certain conditions that have to be met in order for them to flower?
Sun.
Gotcha.
I mean, they want to be happy in general, but good water in their circulation and the rest of it. But sunshine is sort of one of the main things that will encourage blooming. And, on that topic, another neat adaptation they have is called flushing. And so, for instance, Brachycollis green is a variety that the plant is usually a kind of really bright, beautiful green color. Mm-hmm. But when it comes time to bloom, because the flowers are pretty small and they're trying to attract pollinators, the entire plant, including the leaves, will turn color. And so those turn an intense vivid red color when they're blooming. And that's called blushing. And, you know, during the period of blooming, and this is kind of further accentuated by bright light, the plant will turn a vivid, intense color and then will, once it's done blooming, fade back to green. So it's kind of pretty neat how the whole plant
changes color. That is crazy.
And I do have to say, watch out for quote unquote enhanced tillandsia. This is bad. People have figured out spray painting or dyeing them to fake people into thinking that's their natural color. So never, I mean, you can do what you like, but it makes me very sick because you're basically killing the plant because you are basically covering the leaf surface with some other material that prevents it from breathing and growing. But it makes it look bright and pretty, and people don't realize that. So some places have started doing this enhanced color thing, which I think is really pretty bad.
Right. Yep. Yeah. Suffocate it.
Yeah. So, but you will get really striking, beautiful color just from the natural blushing and blooming period. Just give them some sun and make sure they're happy and they'll be beautiful.
That's so cool. I didn't know that they did that. That's amazing.
Yeah. Watch out for the enhanced plants.
Right. Yeah. I've seen shops or places, particularly like big box stores, glue flowers on cactus. Totally amazed. I was like, why would you do that?
Yeah. There's a market for everything, I guess. But
I guess.
We do not enhance our plants. So that's another good tip. Yeah. We've seen it all at this point, but I'm always just excited to see all sorts of fun new crossbreeds coming out and hybrids, cool. And those are really fun to see, and those are emerging all the time. One of the people I went on that tillandsia trip with, Pam Hyatt of Bird Rock Tropicals, has actually, I think, hundreds if not thousands of named cultivars she has created. Wow. And so for these nursery growers, and this is way beyond my level of patience or expertise, you would take two blooming plants and kind of mix the pollen across, collect the seed, and then wait 5, 10, even 20 years for the plants to grow to a size. And then you would sort of see if it's a viable hybrid that you could use. Mm-hmm. And so, the level of patience and organization is pretty staggering, but through this you can create all these neat new varieties, and so that's pretty neat.
That is really cool. How interesting. That's insane.
Tillandsia, they're fun too, because when I was an early houseplant collector and started obsessing, whenever I'd move, the hardest part was moving my heavy potted plants. That was the hardest part of moving. And tillandsia are so wonderful. You could throw them all in a box and it doesn't weigh anything. And it's the easiest thing in the world to move. So I thought there was a fun analogy to sort of modern people and society and how we kind of bounce around all the time and don't necessarily have this kind of deep connection with the earth. That these were plants that had sort of naturally evolved to sort of work with that lifestyle in a sense. And so you have a small space or you move regularly, these guys are happy to come with you. We ship them all over the U.S. And they are amazingly fine sitting in a box for a week or even more, as long as the temperature isn't super hot or super cold. They actually ship really, really well. And so that's made it quite easy to kind of share our products with people all over. You can ship internationally as well. We just don't have all the photo certificates and stuff like that.
But, it's a big process to ship plants internationally.
Yeah, so we decided just not to tackle that piece. But there are nurseries that do, and there are growers pretty much in every corner of the world. So wherever you are, you should be able to find a good local tillandsia grower. And that's always a nice way to do it. You know, they do sell them in sort of more of the big box stores and stuff now, but you'll often get sort of questionable quality
And I'll have links to your website and all the places people can connect with you in the show notes so that people can, because I don't carry air plants and don't intend to, so I will send them all your way.
Thank you. No, that's wonderful. And we're happy to help people with questions and share our different ways of displaying and enjoying them. We saw them as just kind of a mix box of plants if you just want to play with them, or you can try out some of our different products. You know, in general, out in the world, because there are so many different ways you can display these plants, I call it the put an airplane on it dilemma. There was a point we had the sketch where I was put a bird on it, and they were just slapping birds on everything because that was the trend then. And so you can sort of put Tillandsia anywhere. And sometimes that works out well, but sometimes it just feels like you just have to put air plants on it. And so we're big on trying to make it look intentional. Like this, however you're displaying it is really celebrating this air plant. But you really, you can just put them anywhere as long as they're easy to care for and they're getting that light and air and water them easily, then they're going to be happy.
Yeah, that's awesome. What, through just this journey of learning more about this whole family of plants, like what is something that you've learned like on a personal level?
Yeah, that's a good question. What have I learned on a personal level? This is about Tillandsia or plants in general?
Yeah, just plants in general. I think that there's so much we had when we get to care for God's creation, and there's so many lessons and just so much learned through that trial and error process. And I'd love to hear how you are growing as a person.
Good question. No, there's two things that immediately jump to mind. The first thing is when I first started sharing these and started Airplant Man, I was explaining what they were. And now that they've sort of gained a lot of popularity, the question is, I killed one, what do I do now?
Right, yeah.
So the first thing I was going to say is forgiveness. Mm-hmm. And so you have to forgive yourself and try again and learn from what you did wrong. And so, you know, I've killed some, I've talked to some of the biggest growers and they've killed some. Sometimes I'll have one that I've babied along and that one died, and then I'll find one that fell behind the table in a back corner and it's thriving. So
of course,
there's a certain amount of persistence and have a little bit of a sense of humor about it. Try hard, but don't get too obsessed. Sometimes people kind of overly obsess over their plants. You have to sort of, it encourages you to find that right mindset of paying attention, but not obsessing.
Right.
And if you've had problems and mistakes before, try to learn what, you know, like a good scientist, learn what you did and try to tweak things to figure out how to make it work better next time. Mm-hmm. Certainly don't just keep repeating the same thing and killing them, but don't feel like if you had one mishap that you're hated by your plants and nature and you should give up.
You're not deemed to be a plant killer.
Yeah, nature is a trial and error process, and so is your care experience. And I'd say the other thing I just learned is that, you know, like you were alluding to, there's something so I find relaxing and peaceful, and also just kind of helps put our crazy lives in perspective when you see nature and trees and plants in particular. For me, it really hammers home the point that we're part of something much bigger. That globally, I find to be a relief. It's not all about us.
Yeah.
There's a lot of others. We're just a part of this kind of amazing planet. And plants are this, there's something about them that captivates me. I love animals too, but there's something so mysterious. They're kind of quietly just doing their thing, but they're very much alive. And then when you learn about their survival strategies and adaptations, it's just staggering to think that things without what we think of as a traditional brain figured all this stuff out.
Yeah.
And that's I find pretty humbling and inspiring and kind of relaxing too. So that's what I've learned and love about sort of interacting with plants. And I love kind of sharing all that with other people and find that a pretty rewarding way to connect with others as well. It's kind of sharing this thing that we all have in common and helping people appreciate and enjoy it in their lives as well.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. Yeah. The plant community in general are such generous people, particularly generous with knowledge. Like there's just, they really bring people together. Like plants just bring us together in a way that I've never seen anything else bring people together.
No, that's a really good point. And it is very, it brings out the best in people usually. Not always.
Yeah, typically.
And we are still people after all, but no, I couldn't agree more. That's very well said.
Yeah, thank you. What is, if like when people leave this conversation, what is the one thing you want them to like remember about air plant care?
They need water.
Yes.
No. I would say that the one thing they should remember is, like any plant, it has its own care requirements. And so I've kind of shared the basics, and we've got some kind of even more distilled versions of what you should do on the site. But yeah, just make sure that you have a care regimen in mind when you get it because of where you're going to put it, and then see how your plant's doing, pay attention to it, notice differences in its leaves. You'll see kind of as they dry out, they'll get more curly, and once they're watered, those leaves will sort of flesh out and get more straight. But it's, I would say, remember to care for it, but then also pay attention to what's happening and be in the moment and observe your plant and let it talk to you. Yeah. And it'll be happy.
yeah, that's really, I think there's a lot of wisdom to be had in that response.
Absolutely.
I agree. Yeah.
Great,
you wanna
yeah.
I was gonna say, do you wanna just share again really quick where everybody can find you and how they can connect with you and buy air plants from you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I'm Josh Rosen, and I'm at airplantman.com. That's AIRPLANTMAN.com. And please feel free to send us emails, questions, check out the website. We got lots of great information and photos and inspiration. And yeah, we just want to support people out there enjoying nature and plants. And we do donate a portion of our proceeds to the Nature Conservancy and kind of trying to help protect the planet and the Tillandsia there. So yeah, we'd love to encourage your audience to enjoy this unique genus as part of their growing plant collections.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And you are on Instagram as well, too, if people want.
Yes, we're always posting fun stuff in there.
So yeah, you're your guys' page I've heard a lot from.
Yep. And yeah, lots of fun photos and info there. So yeah, please, please reach out to us. We love talking to people out there. And everyone seems to have some questions and stories. So please share them.
Yes.
We'd love to connect and help. But no, I really appreciate this chance to sort of share our journey and a little bit more info about how to what these things are and how to care for them. And we hope everyone out there can enjoy some.
Yeah. Thank you so much for meeting with me today. I learned so much. I feel like I got like a free training.
Excellent. That's what I like to hear. Well,
good.
You know, go out there and enjoy some air plants. It was really great chatting with you. I appreciate it. Those were some great questions that got me thinking as well. So real pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
So much goodness in that episode, right? I learned a whole lot. I loved hearing about how air plants photosynthesize. I really loved the practical tips on how to water your air plants. I feel like I walked away learning so much, and I can't wait to add some to my collection because, believe it or not, I don't have a single air plant. So I'm excited to add those in. If you have an episode or a plant in particular that you would really like to hear on the Get Planty podcast, please let me know. You can head to Instagram at Revive Nursery. Shoot me a message there, leave me a comment on a photo, and tell me what episode you'd like to see next, because I'm trying to work really hard to give you the content that you super want to listen to, and so your feedback will just make that way easier instead of me having to guess what's in your brain. If you could pretty please take a second, head to iTunes, please leave me a review. I've said please like 30,000 times, and that's because I really, really want you to, and I'm really grateful. I know that it takes time out of your day, so if you could just pause this right now, head to iTunes, leave me a review, let me know if you liked the podcast, what you liked about it, how it's helped you, and then take a screenshot of it and tag me at Revive Nursery on Instagram, and I'll just give you all the virtual hugs and love and high fives, because I know it takes effort, and so I'm really, really grateful. And then lastly, if you want to take that houseplant quiz we talked about earlier at the top of the show, head to revivenursery.com/quiz and let me know what your results are, because I super love hearing people's results. My results was a Monstera. So if your results are the same, then we can say a big me too and share some moments together. It will be really sweet and endearing, don't you think? Okay, know that you guys mean the world to me, and I'm so grateful for you. I hope this week you grow well and get planty.